NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP43926-7V1.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samolski, joined for now till Nick kicks me out to go back with Alex Fast by the man himself, Nick Pollock.
What is happening? You know, I said I missed podcasting with him, not doing On the Corner with you.
But you know, I'm sure you miss him that way too, and I don't blame you.
Unbelievable. I don't blame you. Stop that, Eric. I'm so lucky to do this podcast with you. And I love your Blockbuster shirt right now.
Thank you. It's from Bend, Oregon. It is the last Blockbuster.
Oh, that's right. Of course.
Yeah.
But even more important, friend. The last pitcher standing on your team. We're going to go through, of course, the top 100 from today, which is a weird one because, you know, not too many have changed. Like, obviously, like the back half have, and but there's guys who haven't gone yet and stuff. But there's still some interesting things to talk about. And are you particularly worried about certain guys so far, Eric?
I'm trying not to be. You know, I have taken a vocal stance on Twitter that I don't believe that one start should, you know, dramatically impact the way the months and, you know, of prep and analysis that you did. I still firmly believe that. I think that you can take note of certain things. I take note that Zach Gallen was down about 2 miles per hour across his entire arsenal coming off 240 innings. I take note of the fact that, you know, DL Hall in the third inning of his start was 91 with the fastball. But I'm not ready to, you know, to totally move on. And, you know, I said that in regards to AJ Puck, where I was like, this is a guy who had a 5% walk rate last year. Walks are not really part of his game. 6 walks in what, like 2 innings. I'm not ready to say, oh, AJ Puck, this is who he is. Like, it could be an outlier performance, and he gets the Angels this week. So, like, I'm not going to throw him to the waiver wire before I see that start. And I get that if you're in an 8-team, 10-team league, 12-team with shallow benches, whatever, you may feel like you need to move on fast. I would just encourage you not to be super rash when we see a mediocre to poor start, but it doesn't necessarily mean the skills themselves are bad.
So I mostly agree with you here. I'm not saying that AJ Puck or DL Hall are going to be just bad the rest of the year because of the first game. I do want to recognize that in 12 teamers, I mean, even my own, there have been scenarios where Tanner Houck wasn't drafted.
Sure.
And Casey Mize is available. I'm able to stream them.
Sure.
Houck is tonight and Mize is tomorrow. And in those cases, what I really liked about DL Hall and AJ Puck and why I actually had them as high as I do on the list is for two reasons. One, they go early and we were able to make a quick assessment from them. Mm-hmm. And two, that we'd be able to make a decision relatively early instead of the guys that we kind of know already and we don't really know. We know that that's our skill set, and we know it can go either one way or another. Right. And we won't quite know for a month and a half or something. But AJ Puck and DL Hall were intrigued about because they are in these new roles and we're hoping that the skills they have as relievers would carry over. Now, I agree with you that the walk rate that we saw from AJ Puck, not going to be replicated. Should mm-hmm. be. And we'll talk more about this a little bit later, hint at, but it's a nice little preview here. But the worry for me is what defined both Hall and Puck as guys that we were interested in was the foundation of their fastballs, right? Right. And we knew that there would be a decline in velocity for both of them. I was okay with Hall at 92, 93 in the spring. I get that. Mm-hmm. It was 95, 96 as a reliever. We didn't expect that to stick. And right. same thing with AJ Puck. We didn't really expect it to be the same great velocity. But what I did expect was the attack angle. I expected mm-hmm. most of the IVB to be around in the extension, right? And for both of those guys, the attack angle, that is HAVAA, I know it's a terrible acronym. I'm just going to call it attack angle moving forward. Got worse for throwing these four seamers upstairs. That is, it became steeper. They used to be both really flat, which is why they had these excellent swing strike rates last year. And for both guys, Puck and Hall, way down in a bad way. That makes it seem like these are not going to be those fastballs for them. And that's the worrisome part to me. And so in 12 teamers that I'm in, if I have Puck and Hall in multiple of them, sometimes just one or the other, sometimes not at all, but whatever. I am absolutely looking to see who I can replace them with. And I've gotten a lot of chat questions today, even on Friday, just about different guys available in their leagues. And yeah, it's a lot of the guys that you're seeing in that same tier, mm-hmm. right? Ygris Olsen, who's going right now, just got removed with 5 2/3, and I'm so upset about it. But he would be someone that I would have said, yes, go and get Reese Olsen instead of AJ Puck or DL Hall after that first start, right? It's not like I'm saying I'm out completely, 15 teamers, I'm not just done. It's just right now they're not showing that. And it's about getting value now, because I'm not saying predominantly that the opportunity that AJ Puck and DL Hall are good is so much better than Reese Olsen or Casey Mize or Jack Flaherty, or they're all kind of grouped into this.
Right.
So if I see signs that they're bad, I'm just going to try the other one. That's where I'm at.
So there's two things I would say to that. One, I think your team context obviously matters. And that's when you ask questions to somebody like Nick or me or whatever about, like, should you move on from somebody? It depends, right? You do want to have a couple spots on your roster that you are churning for, you know, an interesting starting pitcher flyer. Depending on what your roster is, you don't need to be cutting and churning three starting pitchers every week, like three spots. So if you have AJ Puck and you have DL Hall and you have Trevor Rogers and you have whatever, you know, however you want to make it up, like, you don't need to say, all three of them didn't have good first starts, I'm going to drop all three of them and pick up three new ones. So it does depend a little bit, where, like, AJ Puck could get a little bit more leash on your team depending on the team context. If you drafted really early in the year or earlier, where he was going, you know, around pick 300, so he's like your eighth starting pitcher, then you maybe don't need to give him a little bit that kind of leash. If you were drafting the week before the season and there are probably four starting pitchers or three starting pitchers you took after him, and maybe one of them or two of them didn't also look strong, you maybe churn those spots. And then I also just want to encourage people that, like, yes, it's great to ask people like Nick and I these questions, and we're happy to give you our feedback. But at the end of the day too, like, I'm not going to drop DL Hall right now because I came into the season with a lot of confidence in DL Hall, and I will not hold him despite glaring signs that it's not working. but I will hold him beyond a start or maybe two because I'm not ready to give up my confidence after one start. A guy like Ryan Weathers, who was actually, you know, fine the first start. There were some things we liked about the first start, even though the box score, you know, didn't look great. But just as an example, like, I wasn't as high on him. There were some things that I liked and some things that I was unsure of. So a pitcher like that, if they don't have a good first start, then sure, I'm ready to, you know, even if you say, hey, you got to move on, I'll move on. If you said, hey, you got to move on from D.O. Hall, I would say, in my gut, like, I can't do that yet. And I think people need to listen to that part of their own intuition is like, you've also put time into your teams. And Nick and I could tell you in a vacuum, hey, we don't think it's going to work out for this guy. But if you really believed in that person, maybe you give them a little bit of a longer leash than either one of us would. And that's totally fine because it's your team at the end of the day that you have to manage the way that you feel comfortable.
100%. I mean, always, I very much encourage, go with your gut with it. And like, you guys all make your decisions. We're saying all these things about different guys, but at the end of the day, you are the one who makes those choices. And win or lose, like, a lot of people say, oh man, I won my championship last year. I'm like, great, you did that. We are here just to talk about all this stuff. You know, you did that. I really do want to emphasize, at least for me, how I view these guys in particular and how, like, it's not just about, oh, you had a bad result, okay, we move on or something like that. It's really so much about, like, I like D.O. Hall, but I only liked him up to a certain amount. And he was in a tier with all these others.
Sure.
And it's really just a game of percentages and probability. Mm-hmm. And you, I mean, I really don't think there's a massive gap between so many guys where D.L. Hall and A.J. Puck are. And the fact that my excitement was rooted in something that's already showcased to be worse.
Right.
I am absolutely in that situation. I'm saying, just, it's always a conversation. What is on your wire? Is there something that you can get value in tonight, tomorrow, that you do like as well?
Right.
Then go for that. If you feel like, oh, but I think that maybe D.L. Hall can be better later. I mean, he absolutely can. And I'm not saying that he won't. I actually think that as the season goes on, he will be better because I think that he'll get more comfortable with his four-seamer. I think the velocity will go up over time as he's just trying to be like a command guy. And he's kind of more like a Toby, actually. He's pretty cool at that. But the guy I wanted him to be was someone that would be a 25% strikeout rate guy with a four-seamer leading the way. And that doesn't look like something that's going to show up tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Or something right. like that. And that's why I'm saying this. Not just, one bad start or something, not that you're suggesting it.
Right.
But really just understand everyone is kind of in that same boat. So might as well try something else if it's available. If it's not, then just, yeah, it's okay. You can keep holding them.
Yeah. And as we will use that to transition into the list, because it's important to also not make those decisions based on chasing stats, right? So we're going to go through Nick's list and you're going to see that there are some pitchers who had better starts, statistically speaking, than Puck and Hall, who are considerably lower on the rankings. And that is because, even, you know, there's a player who Nick and I are watching right now, or, you know, we were before we started recording, who's having a really good start, who I don't know if Nick or I would say, yeah, okay, drop Puck for him. Because it's not about what happened in the box score. It's about what you believe to be true of that pitcher's true talent. So everything, yes to everything Nick said, but make sure that you like the pitcher for reasons beyond, hey, he looked really, he threw six shutout innings. Oh, okay. But what was working? What wasn't working? Who was it against? What was good that he did? What was, you know, what is something he could duplicate? Or what was just like, hey, that's a really good box score.
Yeah. A good example is like that. Paul Blackburn. I mean, he went with 0 earned runs and 7 innings against the Guardians, right. I think it was. And it's just, okay. I mean, there are a lot
of
guys
not dropping AJ just, Puck for Paul Blackburn.
Right. No. I'm also not dropping him for Brandon Pfaadt, who was a popular name before the season started, who had a great playoff. And he went, 5 innings, 0 runs, I think it was, 5 Ks, something like that. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's the Colorado Rockies who are so, so bad as an offense. I cannot express this enough. I'm sorry. Nolan Jones is good. He should be fine. But it is rough, that offense. And Brandon Pfaadt, to me, still lacks the actual skills inside the arsenal that showcase something that is really going to push the needle, I think, in your 12-teamers. He's not going to face the Colorado Rockies in Arizona every start, unfortunately, right? So absolutely, there's always context involved with why it is. And right now is the fun moment of, you really should have your hand in as many pots as possible. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild. And I try to do the list as best I can after some guys have started and some haven't. And how much should I move certain ones? And there are especially some of the guys in the top 40. Like, I think I only officially moved 4 guys in the top 40. And we'll get to who those guys are in a moment. But I wanted to move others after the first thought. I really did. And in my heart, I'm like, yeah, I want that guy higher. But we can't yet. Just one game, then it could be very different in the second one.
Yes, it is a grind. It's a long season, people. We need to keep the emotions in check. We will get into this list right now. So as a reminder, again, you can find the list on pitchlist.com. Nick has the tiers. Please don't just look at the tiers. Please read the breakdowns, read the all notes. That kind of stuff. Read the notes. Okay. If you've been listening to our 2-hour marathon podcast in the preseason, that is not going to be the norm here, right? As we continue talking about the same arms week after week, there are just going to be some guys that we don't really talk about. Feel free to jump on Twitter, ask Nick and I specific questions about pitchers. If you hear this podcast and we didn't talk about a specific guy, we're happy to give you our thoughts. But we can't do 2 hours of this every week, especially if it's kind of the same thing we felt about the guy last week.
I'll be there every morning, 10 a.m., 12 p.m. You can come hang out with me, ask any questions there. And I also live stream the list every single Monday, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern time. So come hang out. It's the best time. I love to be distracted. So ask all the questions you have.
Love to be distracted. So today is April 1st. It's April Fool's Day.
What?
So when we go through, so we're not doing the list. No, we are.
We're doing hitters today.
We're doing hitters today. I saw that when Estre Ruiz got demoted, everybody was like, April Fool's, right? It's like, no, he actually got demoted.
Yeah.
When we go through and name the tiers, I want you to name the tiers after a comedian or just a funny person that you feel embodies that list. Anybody you believe is funny.
And do you have a name? Because I love this. You introduced this last week, a name for the list this week.
I do. Okay. So I am calling today's list Imanaga.
Yes.
Because Shota Imanaga is him. Nick and I were trying to tell you all preseason that this dude is very good. And listen.
Rockies.
Yes. Rockies on the road, super cold weather. All of those things need to be built.
Okay.
But also looked really good. That splitter is nasty. We talked about the depth of arsenal of his pitches. It's funny. I was talking to somebody I knew who said he was hearing a lot in the preseason that Imanaga is not a strikeout pitcher.
What?
That's not the case, right? Nick and I were, trying to discuss, not from us, just in general, the discussion of Imanaga was that he didn't have as much strikeout upside, home run issues, whatever. He is a good pitcher. Nick and I were very in on him early on. He's got a really strong depth of arsenal. He looked really great against the Rockies. We can maybe talk about him more later, but the list is named in honor of him, even though he didn't really move much on the list.
No, he can't.
Just because he pitched today and he looked great. And also Nick and I have had him basically around 30, each of us, for a while now. There's just not really much room to go right now. Obviously, if he looks like this all the time, then maybe.
Yeah. But neither of us got him in tout, right? You didn't get him. I didn't get him, right? Someone else then?
Well, I'm in my tout. I'm AO only, and I didn't get him when I drafted for Greg. No, because I was following a plan.
I know. I know. I mean, we both had like, I saw your thing quickly at one point. It had just like Imanaga at the top. I was like, what? I'm so shocked. Yeah. I do want to really preface, actually. I watched it while I was doing the list, and obviously, like the splitter having a ton of whiffs is great. I wasn't as impressed as I thought I was going to be. I know that sounds crazy, but Imanaga's four-seamer is interesting, where he lands eventually in the zone. He kind of gets there a bit. It reminds me of the... did you ever read You Must Have? Wayside Down? What was it? The stories from Wayside School or whatever it is? No. You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
Yeah, I do.
Right. It's like this wacky school and like this teacher's trying to get through everything. And the principal that, they had a whole thing where I don't understand why there's always collisions on the stairs. You go up, you go on the right, you go down, you go on the left. This is easy. Right. Is that kind of thing. So there was one student who couldn't like count properly. And they go, okay, cool. Hey, count to four. You go, potato, soccer building 4. And he would get to four always. But this teacher's like, no, you got to do 1, 2, 3, 4. That's how it feels like Imanaga got to a lot of those strikeouts. It's just kind of like, ah, okay, there we go. We got there. And I worry a little that Imanaga inside the zone doesn't have much outside of that heater. And it's not at 96, 97 or something. And by the end of it, it was closer to 91, 90. And that might burn him against teams that are not the Rockies. There were a fair number of fastballs that were driven to, you know, deep outfield warning track area that didn't go.
Because
it's not the Rockies, that goes.
I did love the tidbit from the Chicago broadcast where they asked Imanaga if he liked pitching in the cold. And Imanaga said he was really excited. He was happy to pitch in the cold. And then they talked to Seiya Suzuki, who's friends with Imanaga. And he was like, he's lying to you. he's lying to you. He doesn't like
pitching in the cold.
Yeah. And so there is a little bit of that too, where it's like, who knows? First start, loosening up, cold weather, maybe the command wasn't there. I still was pleased by
obviously, it still needed executing. Fast used to say this all the time. It's like, yeah, it's a good matchup, but like, and sure, we shouldn't really lean too much into success against bad opponents, but you still got to do it.
Right.
And he did it and passed that test. That's really nice. We're excited about it. He didn't move on the list. We're not going to talk about Imanaga today. The leader of the list today is Gene Bieber. Why did they throw him to Shane Bieber?
Because I had to do it. We will actually talk about Shane Bieber. So we're going to fly through these first tiers. So we're going to start with tier number one. It's Spencer Strider, number one, Corbin Burns, number two, Zach Wheeler, number three. Who is this tier named after and why?
Oh man. There's so many comedians. I'm trying to even remember who's my favorite one. I don't know. There's so many. Let's go with Mel Brooks. I don't know. It's great. Mm-hmm. This is a classic. You feel like, yeah, cool. I'll take Mel Brooks and I'll just put something on. It's fantastic.
Love it. Anything to say about these guys? We've talked to them today.
No, we know. No, they're great.
Okay. Tier number two, number four, Pablo Lopez. Number five, Luis Castillo. Number six, George Kirby. Number seven, Kevin Gausman. Number eight, Logan Webb. Number nine, Cole Reagans. Number 10, Tarek Skubal. Number 11, Tyler Glasnow. Number 12, Zach Gallen. Number 13, Max Fried. Number 14, Aaron Nola. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
It feels like these guys are around here for a while. And they're just always really good and solid. So I'm going to say it's Eddie Murphy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They kind of exploded onto the scene when they arrived. And it's just like, yeah, they're here. But, they're fantastic.
I like that. Anything to add with these guys? Again, other guys we've kind of talked through.
Okay, so the bottom three here. Gallen, Fried, and Nola. All were blah. Okay? Not fun. Gallen, as you mentioned, two ticks down. I'm a little worried about the Yankee thing and all of that. But we're still going to keep going with it. Okay, I'm going to leave him there. Max Fried just got burned. I mean, he threw a 2-2 pitch down the middle. And didn't call it was strike
ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
It was so dumb. And he didn't get out of that inning. 0.2 innings, and he pulled him because he threw over 40 pitches, as he should. It reminds me of a Jacob deGrom inning where he threw 40-plus pitches, and he had to get removed in the first, and then was just so good after. And then there's Aaron Nola, who had to go against said Atlanta team, and could not get away with anything in the zone, and Atlanta just pummeled everything he threw there. Shouldn't happen again when he doesn't face Atlanta. But there is a feeling of is Aaron Nola okay? Are we just assuming that he's not going to have this 4-4 ERA again? So my gut tells me that there's at least one guy, if not two, from tier three who would be above all three of those guys underneath Glasnow. Mm-hmm. But I haven't done it yet. You got to wait. Got to be patient with these studs. So it's all good.
Yeah. There are a couple that I enjoy. Let's just get to them real quick because there's not a lot of movement in this tier two. So tier three was number 15, Bobby Miller. Number 16, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Number 17, Zach Eflin. Number 18, Grayson Rodriguez. And number 19, Freddie Peralta. Who is this tier named after and why?
This is Mitch Hedberg because they're great, but they might not be around for too long.
Ooh, that is dark. I thought you were going to say because they have one pitch or one one liner.
One way of doing it. I'm sorry. Yeah. No, we just made it taken too soon. He was so good.
He was.
Bobby Miller was so amazing. Four seamers were up.
Some of those changeups were filthy.
I know. The thing is, though, I want a breaking ball that he's just like, this is it. Shazam. Mm-hmm. And it's nice, actually, that he said, hey, cool, the slider I'm not really jiving with. So instead of trying to do more with it, I'll turn it into a cutter. But I'm thinking, why weren't you jiving with it? Right. It was great. So at least he's doing that. And maybe that does open the door for something else to show up. Maybe the curveball is that. I don't think it will be. That's the last piece of the puzzle, but the four seamer going upstairs a ton is a huge deal. And I think he actually added an extra inch of vertical movement too, because why not? So Bobby Miller is absolutely the truth.
Yeah.
And I'm such a fan.
I would encourage people not to read too much into Eflin. He wasn't great, but was pretty good through five and a third. And then he got pushed too far. And this wasn't like we're saying he was electric Zach Eflin and, you know, then he just got unlucky. It wasn't a great start, but the box score looks way worse than what the actual performance was.
Absolutely.
We're going to finally start talking about some pitchers who moved on the rankings, but we're going to do that after this break.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So one guy we did not mention, Eric, and we have to a little bit, is Freddy Peralta. He was at 19.
Because he's so good.
It's not just like so good. It was just elite of four-seamers. He took a four-seamer that was already amazing and just made it so much better across the board. I mean, elite induced vertical break all of a sudden for a guy who's already flat and had amazing extension. Like, what? You're not allowed to do that. And his precision of it was great. And I was very out. Like, I have him at 19. That means that I'm not getting Freddy Peralta anywhere, right? There are a lot of people that had him higher than that, above Grayson, above Eflin, above Bobby Miller, and so on and so forth. Like, I wasn't going to get Freddy Peralta, and I didn't. But here he is, not only looking like he's in rhythm as he was in the second half of last year, but just looking even better.
Right.
Oh, man. That looks really cool. It's possible. It's just a one-day thing, though. It's right.
Or
he goes in and out of it. Or injury is a history, too, and all of that.
Or it's possible that we look down the road and say, well, that's the Mets.
That's true. I mean, I'm talking about just the pitch shape. I'm not really thinking
Of...
Like, that's the first start, everyone. I don't really care much about the actual results as much. I'm just saying, hey, are you showcasing skills that are different than we knew? Like, is it a new pitch mix? Is it a new velocity? Are you getting better pitch shape before? That kind of stuff. Am I reassessing how your command looks? You know, then I thought it would be like this. But wait, hold on a second. You actually are doing that.
Right.
That's really the only thing I'm doing for this. And it might surprise you guys that we have as much movement as we do. I mean, we had to remove like Justin Steele and Brian Wu. But it's still, you know, that's really the basis of most of the movement.
Yeah. Also, speaking of which, I'd like to thank you that before my home league started, I said I had a keeper decision between either keeping Brian Wu much later in the draft or Freddy Peralta earlier in the draft. And you said you like taking the talents at the top.
Yeah.
To Peralta over Peralta. Brian.
Oh, Lou, man. And, you made that decision, not me, Eric.
So far, that has worked out. chair number four. It starts at number 20, Joe Ryan. Number 21, Shane Bieber, the aforementioned Shane Bieber. Number 22, Joe Musgrove. Number 23, Framber Valdez. Number 24, that boy, Chris Sale. Number 25, Logan Gilbert. Number 26, Bailey Ober. Number 27, Yu Darvish. And number 28, Michael King. Who is this tier named after and why?
I'm legit like just trying to remember comedians again. It's just hard for some reason. I don't know why.
You want me to talk?
Oh, no.
I could talk about
I know what it is.
Exactly while you Google things.
I got it. This is Norm MacDonald. Because this is the familiar face. He's always there. Some people are just not going to jive with this. And some of these guys, I'm just so much more in than others. And it's just all quality. Yeah. Norm, what a dude.
So Hello. Good. Let's talk about the cover boy. You were slow to move Shane Bieber in the preseason because you wanted to see the velocity. You wanted to make sure the rumors were true. Then you moved him. And now he has jumped up another 8 spots after the first start. So what did you see in the first start that was additional to what you had seen towards the end of spring?
Oh, the breakers. Oh, oh, that cutter was just
so good.
This was legit like old Shane Bieber. It was really, I know it's the athletics, guys. Trust me. I'm not saying that he's going to be an 11 strikeout guy all the time, all that kind of stuff, whatever. But the fact is I was in the preseason being like, look, he had a 20% K rate last year. And he has a history of injury now. His fastball has gotten even worse. He lost his curveball. Like he needs there are a lot of things he needs to fix. Well, he fixed them and he looked magnificent. And the thing that is most valuable is not just having a high strikeout rate. It's not just having volume. It's having both. That's what an ace is. Shane Bieber obviously has the volume and now he's showcasing a 24% strike rate again. Like, are you kidding? I had to vault him above other quality start guys. So like Framber Valdez is there and Joe Musgrove. Those are quality start arms. Well, why not Shane Bieber then? Because he's showcasing the ability to get whiffs like his former self. So I had to raise him to 21 and I'm still kicking myself that I wasn't more aggressive on Bieber listening to the rumors. I know I didn't have the information. If I had the intel.
Yeah,
but it's just how it is, and I mean, you were higher, you expected it. I didn't. So props to you on this.
I was higher and still
acknowledge when I'm wrong here.
I was higher and still wasn't really getting him because I liked a lot of the guys going around him too. And again, like some of those guys are like Chris Sale, and so I'm not really upset about getting Chris Sale. But like for me, it was also just like looking at the changeup too. Which the changeup for Bieber being, you know, 2 miles an hour harder, like a power changeup. And some of them were really good. And the broadcast was mentioning that, like, he didn't really want to throw it that much when he didn't have the fastball velocity because he felt like there wasn't really a gap, right? Like, the changeup right now, it's up 2 miles an hour, but it was averaging 89. So if you're throwing 90 and you're throwing an 89 mile an hour changeup, like, what's the separation? So even that 2 miles an hour is so big. I was really impressed. I go back to like what we talked about before. Like this is a guy playing for one more big contract potentially, right? He's in a contract year. He's at an age where if he signs a 5-year deal, 4-year deal, that might be it. Even though, again, we've seen what has happened with pitcher contracts. But like that external motivation is a real thing for some guys to, you know, give themselves a kick in the butt in the off season to make sure they really, you know, get things turned around.
Absolutely.
And he looks great.
I'm excited. I'm excited for Shane Bieber.
On the flip side, I think we need to talk about Bailey Ober because some people are panicking.
Of course.
About that first start. I'm a little bit of, I fall on the side of like with AJ Puck, command has never really been an issue for Bailey Ober. And there were a lot of command issues in the start. And so that's not to say that there was nothing bad about what happened, but it's just to say, I think there's some of it that is, I don't believe will be something duplicated given what we've seen from him in the past.
Yeah, it's Bailey Ober. I watched all of it. I mean, yes, going 1 for 53 whiffs is very strange. That's, I think, the thing that is so weird And it wasn't as if Billy Ober was just out of the way terrible. Like, it wasn't like his four-seamer all of a sudden was just, nope, that's not the same four-seamer we've seen before. His changeup, yeah, sure, it wasn't the best command one, but like, that's his changeup. And the cutter and slider, like, this is Billy Ober, say for not the best four-seam command. But, I mean, he allowed three home runs. Two of them were on changeups. One of them was on a well-spotted fastball I've been in. It was so weird. And I never, like, I so rarely ever hint at tipping. I don't like believing in that. But this felt like that because right. These guys were just hitting this stuff that when we see it with Billy Ober, it doesn't happen. So I'm not ready to jump ship on Billy Ober. It was a bad day.
Yeah.
I don't know what's gonna, you know, I'm really looking forward to the next start. But yeah, Billy Ober Rizzi still exists to me. I feel like this is gonna be like the Chris Bassett outing of last year.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about Michael King than I am about
Billy Ober. That was weird too.
That because that was weird, and the velocity was way down. And I know the velocity is gonna be down because he is again a starter. Oh, that's interesting. Actually,
no, he was actually kind of up as a reliever, as a starter.
Well, no, but
down relative to being a starter.
I wrote his blurb for Roto World last night, so yeah. I went through all the Statcast data, yeah. And the velocity has changed as of today.
What
it had him down? It had him down almost 2 miles an hour across his whole arsenal, and now it has him down only half a tick.
No way.
So they had some calculation differences. They must have just like tweaked something because I wrote up his blurb like right after the game ended because we get them out as quickly as we can.
Yeah, you're right. 92.7 as opposed to it being like 91.
Right. So I'm now not as concerned as I thought I was. The velocity, I guess, is down a little bit across the board, but not as much. Obviously, the walk issues still remain. And you know, I did hear Derek Van Riper, you know, when he was talking with Eno, bring up that like the early Korea start or performance, you know, he came out of the bullpen, but it meant he was ramping up quicker. And it's possible that he's just not fully ready to go because he had to kind of kickstart his season a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. I think that there's some validity to that. But, you know, I also had some trepidation with him moving to the rotation of like just, what is it going to look like? The expectations were so high after the end of last year, but I also had him ranked in my mid 30s. So I didn't expect, and I still don't expect him to be as bad as he, or as inconsistent as he has been.
Mm. Yeah. I watching this one too, it wasn't one of those where he was just completely scattershot. I mean, he did have some misses, but it wasn't this, I don't know. He just kind of lost more batters. And it's so strange. Michael King does not walk seven guys. I actually was saying constantly, and I still believe it, Michael King is a command guy. Mm-hmm. He is not a middling, like, oh, I guess I just didn't have whatever. It's like, what? No, you are supposed to nail every spot with that sinker and that sweeper. Like, you're really good at this. That, to me, is something was up with him. And that happens all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm not ready to say that Michael King is whatever. You could argue that there is an injury involved or something that would cause him to be off a little bit more. I don't know. Something affected him yesterday. I don't like guessing injuries. I'm right, just saying course. It could easily be like, hey, you know what? I wasn't getting the landing foot right. Or I was just a little sick or something like that. I don't know what it is. It's oftentimes the guys can just be off. I'm not ready to say that he's just, you know, donezo now. But I did want to appreciate Logan Gilbert, who watching his game, honestly, four seamer was well spotted and he was looking way better than what I normally see from last year. Splitter was working. He had the slider. Like, if you remember the second half, Logan Gilbert last year, fastball was terrible and he only had the slider. And now I see the slider working with the fastball and the splitter. I'm a lot more encouraged by it. It's one start, but I did want to at least start the movement of, hey, look, Gilbert is looking very much better than mm-hmm. Ober. And when you're in a tier, it's really pretty much equal at first. Right. And then if you see someone, it's, you know, down here weighing, looking like their worst self and someone's looking like the best self. Well, yeah, I'm going to acknowledge at least that the first week.
Fully agreed. Let's move on to tier five. Starts with number 29, Blake Snell. Number 30, Shota Himanaga. Number 31, Dylan Cease. And number 32, Jesus Luzardo. They all moved up one spot. presumably because Justin Steele was removed. Yep. So is there anything you feel like you need to add about either of these?
Yeah, I didn't change anything in tier five, tier six. This is the Adam Sandler tier because sometimes, you know, you love them. Other times you're like, what is this? You know?
Sure. Yes.
Right. You don't know quite what you're going to get.
Like when Dylan sees through that 65 mile an hour changeup where his whole body slowed down and you were like, what are you doing? What is that?
Yeah, pitch? That is
don't weird. Do that.
Yeah. No. But yeah, nothing really to note here. I know Lazardo did well, but it was against the Angels. Snell should be back. I mean, first start looks like it's going to be Wednesday against the Dodgers. And Cease, four seamers were up and sliders were well spotted. That's good. I wonder, apparently there's word of him throwing a sweeper a little bit. I wonder if he's going to also learn a cutter by like May 1st. I'm hoping. Cross my fingers. I can dream.
You never know. You can.
Never know.
Tier number six starts number 33, Tanner Bibee. Number 34, Tristan McKenzie. Number 35, Chris Bassett. Number 36, Merrill Kelly. Number 37, Nathan Eovaldi. Number 38, Nick Pivetta. Number 39, Bryce Miller. Number 40, Hunter Brown. And number 41, Christian Javier. Who is this tier named after and why?
This is John Stewart, who I, you know, there's some guys in here you're just like, I know I liked you before. You know what? All right, I'll enjoy you again now. Right, like Merrill Kelly and Chris Bassett, because he just returned from The Daily Show. Okay,
I always liked John Stewart. All of these guys again moved one because of the Justin Steele omission. So, is there anything that you feel like you need to address about any of these arms?
Man, I really loved Christian Javier's changeup, and I've been saying it during the spring, and I saw it against the Yankees, and it was glorious, and he had 65% strikes on it. And yes, he had a sub 60% slider strike rate, but because he had the changeup, it was still really good. And he only had one whiff on his four seamer. But if Christian Javier actually locates that four seamer like he has for two straight years, two, then Christian Javier is going to be so dope with a fastball and changeup. Obviously, it's Javier, so we don't really know quite yet. But I mean, everyone here who has pitched, say for Bibee, and maybe you could say Bassett, it looked pretty good. Bryce Miller looked better than I expected. Pivetta, Whirly Bird was great. Hunter Brown, I do like the fact that he's leaning more into that high IVB four-seamer now. He changed his slider into a cutter. It was precise, just slightly out of the zone, but precise. And I think there's going to be a growing period still with Hunter Brown, but he's going to be very good. And Eovaldi's doing the right things with splitters and cutters and whatnot. It's great.
It is great. We got a big tier to talk about.
Yeah, here. We do.
Tier number seven starts number 42, Casey Mize. Number 43, Cutter Crawford. Number 44, Brian Baio. Number 45, Jared Jones. Number 46, Jack Flaherty. Number 47, Luis Gil. Number 48, Ryan Pepiot. Number 49, Christopher Sanchez. Number 50, Tanner Houck. Number 51, Nestor Cortez. Number 52, Jose Berrios. Number 53, Aaron Civale. Number 54, Rhys Olson. Number 55, Garrett Whitlock. Who is this tier named after and why?
This is Patrice O'Neill. When you would see him, you just knew it was going to be fun. It's just like, all right, what we got, Patrice? Like, this is going to be great. Oh, man, I loved him. He was so good. And that's this tier. It's just all these fun names. And like, what was really tough about it is Casey Mize hasn't gone yet. Tanner Houck. Right. Hasn't gotten. Christopher Sanchez just went. Ryan Pepiot,
Rhys Olson just went.
Got destroyed. But I mean, we kind of understand it's the Rangers and Coors, and like, it's okay. It might be a little rough at first, but that's not why you have Pepiot.
Luis Gil hasn't gone.
Luis Gil. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And then there's Jared Jones in here and Brian Bale. Like, oh, this is the best. This is so fun.
We gotta make sure that we're wrapped up here by 9:40 so we can double screen Tanner Houck and Luis Gil. Just, you know. Nothing is more fun maybe than Jared Jones. And we will ask Nick about Jared Jones after this break.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are.
Go, go, go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible.
Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43926-7V1.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Jared Jones, big mover in this tier, up 18 spots. We've all seen the box score, but what was it about his performance that really stood out to you?
So entering the season, there were two major questions about Jared Jones. One, what kind of leash is he going to have with the Pirates? Are they going to let me go 90 pitches right out of the gate? We hope so. We saw like five innings or so from spring training, but it might be slowed down a bit. We didn't even know he was going to be in the right rotation, but really there was that element. And I guess I'm going to throw in there the whole Pirates, like, can wins happen? And then there's a second, which is how good is his ability to actually throw strikes?
Right.
And I had some worry before he even had the four walk spring training game. I watched him and I saw a lot of east west missing with his four seamer, which is normally a product of like adrenaline and just kind of overthrowing and everything like that. And I was saying I might be a little bit weird on it. The next one, it's four walks and it's, you know, more validating of that. However, there's a massive chunk of evidence for 240 innings in the minors of a sub 10% walk rate. So I said, okay, maybe he's working on some things. Maybe he's just kind of getting his nerves out. Don't know. I'm excited to see him. I'm going to go for other guys that I know are just generally more expected to go six frames or in more less kind of volatile situations of just like maybe it's amazing or not is kind of what Jared Jones was. But Jared Jones was dope. I mean, my gosh, the four seamer is stupid elite, and his slider was thrown more than it. He threw more sliders than one of the best four seamers in the game. So yeah, he's pretty amazing. There is still a little bit of chaotic energy. But no, he threw enough strikes absolutely to make me feel very good about it.
Yeah.
The whole thing is wonderful. And you know the comp for Jared Jones, right? Who's the best comp you can think of?
I don't know the comp for Jared Jones.
Well, it's Spencer Strider.
Yeah. So yes, I tend to not try to make
no, that but it comp. Is though. But
yeah. Yeah.
When comps are to me. Like, sure, you can say what the ace comp is and then the lower one. Like, I can even say Hunter Green is a lower one.
Right.
If you want. But Jared Jones's four seamer is more akin to Spencer Strider's. And the fact that it's two pitch like this, even just how he does it all. And if you remember when Strider first came up, it was wilder than it is now.
Sure.
And it reminds me a ton of Jared Jones. A big benefit that Spencer Strider has had is playing for Atlanta.
Right. Exactly.
And Jared Jones gets the Pirates. But they just swept the Marlins.
Right. The Pirates are going to be feisty. They're pretty good.
Feisty. Oh,
feisty.
Oh, boy.
Speaking of feisty, the Red Sox did pretty well against the Mariners. And you have basically their entire rotation in this.
This is what we're talking about, though.
But we were talking about this. I know you talked on the craft to Eno about this. He was talking about the Red Sox rotation. But the things that stood out to me, and you can address them however you want with any of the four pitchers that are in this tier, but the Red Sox is a team through the fewest four-seam fastballs of any team in Major League Baseball over the first 4 days. In addition to that, we have talked about the increased vertical movement, the IVB, on the fastballs of three of the five guys in their rotation, I believe we've mentioned. So they are really prioritizing vertical movement. It would have been Pivetta, Crawford, and Hauk, I believe.
Well, we don't know about Hauk yet. So.
Right. Well, and also Whitlock, who has lowered his release point. And so I believe what Lance Brozowski was discussing was that he was getting better movement. I guess it's not really IVB because he's throwing a sinker, but just shifting the way in which he is throwing his primary fastball. But anyway, what I was going to say was just throwing fewer four seamers when they are thrown, throwing them up in the zone with more vertical movement, more as like strikeout pitches, leaning on the cutters and the sliders. And that seems to be a massive organizational shift based on all the guys they hired this offseason. And it first time through the rotation, but it seemed to work for these guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is actually something we saw starting midway through last year, right? We saw Cutter Crawford embrace the cutter more. We saw it with Nick Pivetta as well. And Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock, well, I'm just assuming that Houck does as well. But Garrett Whitlock needed to do that because his sinker wasn't enough against lefties and he embraced the cutter, and that's great. It is interesting. I mean, the four-seamer usage, I completely understand. The fact that Bayo and Whitlock are both sinker guys really does amplify that, as well as Cutter Crawford and Nick Pivetta being, you know, having a wide array of secondaries, right? But the main thing with Whitlock, and I think Lance actually did mention this and it really put it on the radar for me, was his extension was so good in 2022, over 7 feet, and then it was closer to 6 feet in 2023, which is usually a product of injury, which he was. He just wasn't able to exert, right? You're not able to really push off and use all your strength with every pitch as you can. And I was really curious what his extension was going to be. And what do you know? It's over 7 feet.
Yeah.
And that's such a big difference. And the fact that Garrett Whitlock does have this cutter now, slider and sweeper.
Right, exactly. In the spring, I was like, is he throwing a gyro slider or is he throwing a cutter? I couldn't tell. And then it's like, he's throwing both. Both and a sweeper. Yeah.
Okay, great. Changeup looked great against the Mariners. I do want to mention it was sub 10 whiffs and sub 30% CSW. Yeah. He was throwing effectively around the zone. It's a bad Mariners offense, and they ate it all up, and it was great. So,
and that sweeper didn't get a lot of whiffs, but
I think there's a lot of potential in here. He did get out of some jams by striking out batters. He did throw that sweeper down and in, or maybe it was a gyro slider down and into lefties, which is so nice to see. It's one of my favorite skills in general, is just being able to throw a slider, gyro slider, to opposite batters' ankles. What I saw from Mackenzie Gore today, which was really cool with the cutter. Oh, that was so nasty. Oh my gosh. You got to watch this one at bat. And I think in the second inning where he threw a 3-2 cutter, and it was beautiful. I'm sorry. You got to watch that one. Anyway,
check it out.
Just watch the whole at bat though. It's so good. I made noises while doing the list and watching that, but Garrett Whitlock looks very encouraging. I'm not quite sold yet because he didn't get all the big swing strikes, but very much so like, hey, we're feeling good right now. Let's go with that. And I say it often, you know, in the preseason about, I want a guy that can go six innings. So every 5 days, he's allowed to go six innings throughout the year and has the ability to be a 25% strikeout rate and ability to go 65% plus strikes or so, right? Mm-hmm. Like throw a lot of strikes, get a lot of whiffs, and be able to go long volume, and you're going to be great. So Whitlock showcases that. Cutter Crawford's showcasing that. He has 19.5 IVB. It was confirmed. That's what Eno hinted at, and he did it, and it was stupid good. Brian Bayo is honestly not that much different, is the thing.
He's not.
And we were hoping that he would, and he at least is leaning into the slider more. Like the second half he did last year, and he's keeping that, but it's not the same whiffable slider. It's more of a tighter, almost cutter slider.
Right.
And I do wonder if that does open the door for him to also get the Whirly Bird or whatever in there.
It'd be nice.
But it's something that is missing for Bayo to really be that 25% plus strikeout guy. However, the changeup and sinker command is great.
Right. And that's why you see these guys in this tier and not tiers above, is like there's still one or two things that need to happen before they're like, ooh, yeah, need this.
Right. Guy. And I mean, there are a lot of these that could easily just go into that as it continues on, right? Sure. As the season progresses. Right. But we're still figuring it all out, seeing how sustainable things are. Do they have all the skills that are needed? And I do want to mention that with Jack Flaherty, who showed up with only 93 on the fastball, not 95. He was really slider only. And what I mean by that is the slider command at the bottom zone was so good. that I carried everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the other things were not very good.
Yeah, I was less impressed by it than I thought I would be, but I'm still intrigued, more intrigued than I was coming into the year, but I'm less enthusiastic than I was at the end of spring.
Right. Because I don't know what shows up when the slider isn't exactly perfect as it was in that game. So hopefully the four seamer gets better. There's more separation with that. The changeup or the curve improve as well. Maybe he just has that slider. That's just what he does. And he has it 80% of the time, and that's fine. But I feel that Jared Jones's ceiling is ridiculous and Brian Bello is ridiculous at the moment, that I move those two guys above of Flaherty. And that's why I see the -2. Also Carter Crawford, because I had Casey Mize in and then Jack Flaherty. And we haven't seen Mize yet, but I still like that more because the four seamer seems like a more sustainable floor for him. Not to mention the slider and splitter to me are better than any other thing after the slider for Flaherty. So I'm excited for that one tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. We'll get better feel for that afterwards. We got a small tier here in tier 8. It starts number 56, Carlos Rodon, number 57, Hunter Green, number 58, Yusei Kikuchi, number 59, Mitch Keller. Who's this tier named after and why?
Okay, let's go with Gilbert Gottfried. Because, you know, they're like big names. Yeah, they're like big names. But like, you know, it can be great, but it's also maybe sometimes like, okay, you know what? This might be a little too much.
Yeah.
I loved Gilbert Gottfried, though, by the way. He was great.
He was. Anything you feel like you need to talk about with these guys? We've kind of talked about all of them a lot.
Not really. Kikuchi's not in the rhythm yet. I imagine he can be. But for right now, I felt that it just wasn't secure, and I felt very shaky starting him at the moment. And tier 7, I don't feel him. I'm like starting all those guys.
Yeah.
With Rodon, his velocity was better. It was 95.8. That's great. But it was also a lot more in the first, and then it went down. And good Rodon ramps up. And obviously high adrenaline because of the Astros, the first game of the season. So I am concerned that that 95.8 isn't what it is in the next one. And I do like the cutter, though. I think the cutter is a good addition for him.
Yeah, we'll see. It's definitely a step in the right direction for him.
You're the cutter, guys.
Bigger, it might be, not the splitter. You're the cutter. Tier number 9.
I hope
stars number 60, Ronaldo Lopez. Number 61, Reed Detmers. Number 62, Garrett Crochet. Number 63, Jordan Hicks. Number 64, AJ Puck. Number 65, Dylan Hall. 66, Gavin Stone. 67, Trevor Rogers. 68, Louis Varland. 69, Mackenzie Gore. And 70, Max Meyer. Who's this tier named after and why?
It's that random SNL cast member that you always like. He's there. You don't know if like you should get too attached to them. If they're going to still be around for a while, but like, oh yeah, is that guy from that thing? Oh, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I like that guy.
Yeah.
With the face. Yeah.
We
talked about Puck and Hall and why they're moved down. And obviously this is a really good tier. And this is like where we're talking about where Nick has some of these, the other pitchers above them. And some of these kind of like more boring veterans who maybe pitched well are below. But the two biggest risers in this tier are Reed Detmers up 21 spots and Garrett Crochet up 19 spots. So what did you see from those lefties that caused you to bump them up?
Well, I mean, obviously Garrett Crochet dominating and throwing like 101. And, you know, it's pretty cool with that for Garrett Crochet. Obviously he gets Atlanta next, which won't be as fun as the Tigers, who are not a good offense guys. Like seriously, the Tigers, I wanted them to be better. But they just are not good right now at all. And it's making, I think, a lot of these guys look a little bit better than they are at the moment. Speaking of someone that goes tonight, and I'm going to say another roundup, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong on both. With Garrett Crochet, I also am not sold that he's going to be able to locate inside the zone consistently. I really, really want to lean in on the comp I have, which is lefty Michael Kopech. And if you guys remember rostering Michael Kopech, it was very volatile and painful. He would have these amazing games where we go, okay, fine, I guess we're on board. And then all of a sudden it wouldn't. And then I still don't know where he is at the moment. So he's kind of listed as a cherry bomb. Well, Reed Detmers, my gosh. Reed Detmers, buddy, pal, what is up? Man, y'all know last two seasons at this moment, I was so in, right? Entering, leaving spring training, going in, I was like, Reed Detmers, Reed Detmers, Reed Detmers. He was very much in that other tier of saying, cool, let's give a shot at Reed Detmers because it looks so cool. And what I liked in previous years was the slider that he would go back foot I liked the fastball, but I didn't really understand the fastball. And in retrospect, this summer, or sorry, this, it feels like summer vacation, during a winter break, I realized, oh man, all the pitch metrics on the four seamer that I've learned now hate Reed Detmers' fastball. And that's why this 95 mile per hour pitch that was higher in velocity last year had worse results than the slower one from the previous year, even though he had really good command of it. So I was like, okay, you know why I'm out on Reed Detmers? I can't do this. And also the slider goes in and out. I don't really know. Change up and curve, not good, right? But here's the thing. Reed Detmers, what does he do? Oh, you know what? I'm just going to add like 2.5 ticks of IVB on my four seamer and get 12 whiffs against the Baltimore Orioles with it. What? Just bam, there it is. Oh, you know what? Never mind. It's a different fastball now. It's actually kind of good. That's cool. I don't know if that's going to stick with the locations of it. It was very scattershot. And it also was scattershot a bit with everything else in his arsenal. The slider was not consistently down in glove side as we really want it to be. I just don't have any faith in that curveball and changeup being really consistent offerings. Maybe the curveball a little bit, but not like a real proper number two. So it's still cherry bomb-esque to me, but if he does actually have a legitimate fastball now that he can command up and do well with, then that's really cool. I'm going to acknowledge that because that's what Tierney is all about.
Yeah, I fully agree. There's a lot of interesting guys in here that I think you can churn and, you know, hope for some upside. There's some guys that we were in on and I could see, you know, maybe the excitement not panning out as much.
Right.
Anybody else you feel like you need to address in this tier?
I mean, we talked about Puck and Hall, so all right. I'm down for Puck against the Angels, as you mentioned. Like, all right, it's not a bad matchup. Like, let's just give it a shot.
Yeah, and if he doesn't succeed there, then...
Right. I mean, I think we'll get a better understanding because of the walk stuff that happened last time won't happen for Puck. So we give that a shot. Meanwhile, Deal Hall gets the Mariners, and like, I'd still give that a shot. It's against the Seattle Mariners, right? Again, I do want to mention, I'd rather take a chance on Reed Detmers at the moment because that is a skill improvement to Red Sox on the road. I don't want to overstep Renato Lopez, who hasn't pitched yet, and we still like that situation, everything that we do about it. Mm-hmm. I would rather chase that kind of thing, right? So that's why they're in tier 9. It's this really important distinction to me of, hey, tier 7, I'm like, we're running with this, right? But tier 9 is, okay, either we haven't seen it yet, Louis Varland is in here, Max Meyer, Mackenzie Gore, Renato Lopez, or we've seen them and we're not too impressed yet, we're not convinced yet is what I should say. Like Jordan Hicks, he's throwing 97, not 95, which is really good. And the ICR on the sinker was 25%, which is fantastic. It's pretty much like what it was last year at 100 for that sinker. But the sweeper was worse. And the splitter got some whiffs, but it wasn't a strike pitch. So is that enough for Jordan Hicks? I mean, it's like on the Padres, maybe, but there's a lot of walks too. I'm not quite sold on Jordan Hicks, but if it's at 97 and then the sweeper is working, then maybe, but we probably won't get that command from him. Gavin Stone. Oh, this is a weird one. I'm actually curious. I think you wrote about Gavin Stone.
I wrote about him after the last spring start, but I haven't yet had a chance to watch his start the other day, actually.
So Stone, I was hoping for more is the way I'll put it. Like, I don't like change of focus guys in the first place, right?
Right.
So changeup's your best pitch, still is. Cool, great. How's the fastball? Okay, it's 95.5, but it's pretty pedestrian in all the other pitch shape stuff. And it's not really this bullying fastball. I'm glad that it is 95.5, not 94. That just helps it, of course. But it's not this, if I don't have my changeup, my fastball will handle everything pitch, right? The slider and like nothing really else showed up that was in any way interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's it for Gavin Stone. And I go, wait, hold on. I need more. I need one more thing.
Yeah.
That lets me latch on to Gavin Stone. It's a great situation. Don't get me wrong, but it's just not the electricity that you want, I think.
That's sometimes the nature of like those new pitches, right? Is that they come and they go. They're not super consistent. It's great that he made these changes to his pitch mix, but we don't really know, A, how much he's going to rely on them early in the year and how reliable they will actually be, these other pitches that he's throwing, trying to offset the changeup. Changeup got a lot of whiffs, and that's better than he did last year, when he was apparently tipping his other pitches too.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know if I want to lean too heavily. Trevor Rogers was better than the results were. But I'm still not convinced that he can do this. He is at 93 at least. So that's cool.
Yeah. And that's a big difference to me between this tier and tier 10, where tier 10, you saw some better results. Tier 10 are some, you know, good. They're kind of like, you know, definite Tobys. It is a tier of Tobys. You know the deal with Tobys. They don't have the upside of the guys that are in this particular tier, even if the results were good. And that starts with number 71, Tyler Wells. Number 72, Marcus Stroman. Number 73, James Paxton. Number 74, Brandon Faught. Number 75, Michael Wacha. Number 76, Seth Lugo. Number 77, Eric Fetty. 78, Zach Littell. 79, JP France. And number 80, Clark Schmidt. Who's this tier named after and why?
This is Kate McKinnon. She's just always great.
So good.
It's just like, you know, it's just like, yeah, okay. You need something, I got you. You know? Phenomenal. Kim McKinnon.
Anybody, I mean, the biggest risers here, Zach Littell up 10, JP France up 16, Clark Schmidt up 10. Is there anybody you feel like you wanna highlight?
I mean, so okay, tier 10 versus tier 12 was just, hey, how much intrigue is there? I don't really like the first matchups for France and Schmidt against each other. But now they're past that. Okay, come on in. You guys are looking fine enough. I am intrigued by Marcus Stroman throwing cutters and getting 10 whiffs out of like 35 thrown, which is really cool. Is that a Yankee thing? Probably not.
They might be leaning in on that cutter too now.
Right. I mean, the Yankee cutter has been a major thing, and now Stroman being a sinker guy, like, yeah, you should be throwing on this cutter. Where are you going? And that might actually be a major thing. We already talked about Faught. I mean, a lot of these guys are here just as matchup focused, and in some cases, like, I'd rather have Tyler Wells and Max Meyer right now, right? Like I am picking and choosing from tier 10 and tier 9. It's hard to really intersect them. But I have Tyler Wells on my team, and I like the matchups he has for a winning ball club. Yep. And I like grouping all the similar guys together. So it's hard to discern sometimes like where some of tier 10 should be in tier 9 and tier 9 should be underneath. Just really go for the thing that you're looking for between those two tiers.
Tier 11 has, again, some of the more interesting names too. We get number 81, Ryan Weathers. Number 82, Charlie Morton. 83, Brady Singer. 84, Chase Silseth. 85, JP Sears. 86, Kyle Harrison. 87, Ryan Nelson. 88, Sean Manaya. 89, Chris Paddock. 90, Griffin Canning. 91, Bowden Francis. 92, Jordan Wicks. Who's this tier named after and why?
When you see them, you get, you make that kind of noise, but you don't really know, you know, and it's always some sort of intrigue. And so that's Bill Hader. I'm like, oh man, Bill Hader is just always, there's always intrigue with him. Is there something going on?
Yeah. And it can end up bloody and dark, just like Barry, which was great.
There it is. You had to go there. Yeah,
I did. Great show. Two biggest risers here, obviously Brady Singer and Jordan Wicks are additions to the list. They were not on the list previously. Though I know from chatting with you that you are tepid on Brady Singer being different than he's been in the
past. I know that the four seamer was grouped in with the sinker on Savant and everything, but the four seamer is still like terrible IVB. It is actually somewhat flat, and he has good extension. It's always been Brady Singer's thing is extension. I'm not ready to just say that, cool, Brady Singer is going to be a high four seamer dominant guy. He was throwing against lefties. I hope that helps him a ton. I really do. But what I did see was a pitcher who got 16 whiffs on a slider. And that's actually happened before from Brady Singer. Like, we've seen this version of Brady Singer before. It happens all the time. You can't be a cherry bomb without the cherry. So it's the Twins also without Royce Lewis, who are not a good offense right now. Right. And you just happen to see one of the better starts he'll have all year and the first game he started. I don't actually believe that he's a brand new man and going to dominate now.
I thought I was going to see more from the slider because he had been working on adding the sweeper in the spring, and that was like the big talk of spring, is he wanted to add a sweeper because he was throwing a sinker and, you know, whatever. And so I really thought when I looked at the box score I was going to see more sinker slider usage. And then when I watched the start and when I looked at the metrics on the start, I was like, this is the same slider. And maybe he has a sweeper and didn't throw it. He was throwing the same slider. And again, it worked. So maybe he didn't feel the need to go in to do other things. He didn't need to break out the sweeper. Everything he was doing was obviously working. It might be something, you know, he digs into the bag of tricks next time out. I don't know. But all I can say is from that first start, there was nothing really different from Brady Singer other than a few more four-seamers up than he had previously.
Yeah. At the risk of going long on this podcast, what is in your bag of tricks?
Mine?
Yeah.
I got very little right now. Right now, my bag of tricks is filled with toddler snacks, which just prevents crying, which is super important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of it. Maybe a beer for me.
Now, there you go. I would have accepted just like actual Trix cereal.
I wasn't a Trix cereal guy. I did like some Cocoa Puffs because then you got chocolate milk at the end.
Oh my God. Cereals are just dessert, guys.
Yeah. That was like the first time I went to sleepaway camp and my mom would never let me eat like sugary things at home. I went to sleepaway camp and I had like a box of like Lucky Charms and I was like, what is this? These tasty marshmallows in this milk. And then I just chug this rainbow sugar milk when it's done.
Oh my God.
I wanted Lucky Charms all the time.
It was so good.
So good. Oh. Anybody else in this tier you feel like is worth discussing? Obviously, you will write about Sean Manaea, who is the guy we were hinting at, who threw six shutout innings while we were recording. I wasn't able to watch too much of that start, so I don't really want to weigh in. I assume you're going to talk about it in the rundown. Anything you want?
Yeah, I mean, Sean Manaea looked good. He threw fastballs in the zone, and they were. I mean, it was really just fastball dominant. I don't think he faced a very good offense though, because it's the Tigers. So I can't really read too much into it.
Mm-hmm. Baden Francis, who we talked about, who gave up three home runs and four runs in like the first inning and then settled down actually a little bit against the Astros, wound up with a 30% whiff rate, 37% CSW. I'm intrigued to watch this afterwards and see if there's anything here.
Yeah, I think with Baden Francis, it's about the matchups. What is really interesting about the matchups too is Jordan Wicks. I almost pointed to tier 10, but he's gained the Dodgers, and I just can't possibly endorse that. So with Jordan Wicks, he has a new four-seamer. If you actually remember in the spring, he had a game where he got like seven strikeouts all on four-seamers, not the changeup. And I thought, what? That's not it. His four-seamer is bad. How is he doing this? This can't be right. Like, this is just a weirdness of spring. No, he got a ton of whiffs against the Rangers with that four-seamer. And that might be a real thing. For Wicks. But then again, you think, okay, cool. Let's say you have a decent IVB four seamer up top, right? And you have a changeup. That's pretty good. You still need one more thing. You can't really be like a Luke Weaver type. Right. You know, those don't really work. You got to have some sort of breaking ball. So I wonder if you can add that last element, but there is more interest in Wicks now for me.
Yeah, I agree. Final tier. 93, Kenta Maeda. 94, Luis Severino. 95, Ranger Suarez. 96, Dean Kremer. 97, Frankie Montas. 98, Logan Allen. 99, Lance Lynn. 100, Cody Bradford. Who's this tier named after and why?
This is Kristen Wiig. You know, it's one of those things where you're looking for a star. And you're like, all right, I need someone that is just going to always knock it out. It's Kristen Wiig. And, you know, it's tier 12, so this is more for the deep league stuff. You're looking for something. You say, you know what? Ranger Suarez. All right. You know, I get the Nationals this week. I'll steal a win. Okay. Dean Kremer. Yeah. He didn't do that well against the Royals tonight, but he's got another decent matchup. Like it could work.
Bounce back after a rough start. I thought he recovered.
Cody Bradford's kind of interesting. You don't want to start him in the next one, but he's looking like, I know it doesn't sound great now, but he's looking like a lefty version of last year's Bailey Ober.
I wonder if you don't want to start him with the next one, if he then loses his spot to Michael Lorenzen though.
He might, but he also had a really good start of the weekend. So I don't think they're ready to do that. The way I see it with the Rangers is that they're just going to leave Lorenzen as a swingman until there's a need. Because why not? If Cody Bradford is doing fine, then just leave him there.
Right. And Dane Dunning has been a good swingman in the past. So, you know, those are flexible options. We talked about Luis Severino when we were chatting that, like, please, I know it's really tempting to read the tweets that he was hitting 98 and getting excited that he was hitting 98. And it's important to understand that he had velocity last year as well. And he did not have vertical movement on the fastball. He lost so much IVB. It was back just the tiniest bit. Like it was a little bit better than last year, but not near what it was in his peak. And I'm bummed because I was buying in on the bounce back. And I have kept him in like 15 team leagues. I'm not ready to cut bait on him in those leagues yet, but I moved on in some 12 team leagues. I didn't love what I saw.
Eric, 2021, very small sample, 17 IVB on the four seamer. 2022, 16.7, 2023, 15.4. And Severino's four seamer IVB in 2024, 14.3.
Is it 14.3? I thought I had seen in that graph that it was 15.4.
14.3. Okay. That was 15.4 last year.
Okay.
Misread. Yeah. So that's it's even worse. Yeah. Like, you're supposed to get it back to that 2022 and you went the other way.
Right.
Oh gosh. It is not a fun time. I'm ready to cut bait.
I mean, the only upside you have for Severino is that, you know, that he's going to start as long as he's healthy. Like, that's what the Mets brought him there to do.
Yeah.
And possibly he settles in to be a pitcher who doesn't hurt you every time he starts, but he doesn't really help you. And so maybe in deeper formats, you can play matchups with that. But that, to me, that maybe seems like what his future is like, if he had gotten, you know, the Tigers in the, actually he will, they're going to come back around again. He will get the Tigers. So like, maybe you would make that start because you would think, okay, that maybe he gives up 2 runs in 6 innings.
He's not going to get the Tigers. He's going to go to Cincinnati. Then he's going to face Atlanta.
Don't do that. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
It's Manaea, Hauser, and Quintana the next 3 days.
I always forget that Quintana's their ace, I guess. Whatever.
I know. Hauser, honestly, tomorrow, I maybe should have even considered putting Hauser on instead of Severino, because I feel like that's at least, like, there's a chance that works if it's just pumping fastballs on there.
Sure. Who knows? Any of these other guys in this final tier you feel like you want to say anything about?
I don't know, man. It's no.
That's it. Pack it up.
Get out of here. We got to watch Luis Hill, Tanner Houck.
We got to watch the end of this Ronel Blanco no hit bid. Am I allowed to say that?
Is that really going on?
7 no hit innings against the
Blue. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Here I'm like, okay, he struck out 10 minor leaguers, guys. Yeah. Wow.
He should have been on the list. We're gonna Nick and I are gonna sign off and go watch that. So I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And we're gonna go ruin a no hit bid.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are.
Go, go, go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP439267V1.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.